Prime Minister for 2 years. A broadcast from London, heard throughout the world on May the 10th, 1942.
I have now served for 2 years, exactly to a day, as the King's First Minister. The tremendous period through which we have passed has certainly been full of anxieties and exertions. It has been marked by many misfortunes and disappointments. This time, 2 years ago, the Germans were beating down Holland and Belgium by unprovoked, brutal, merciless invasion. And very soon there came upon us the total defeat of France and the fatal surrender at Bordeaux. Mussolini, the Italian miscalculator, thought he saw his chance of a cheap and easy triumph and rich plunder for no fighting. We were left alone, our 250,000 Dunkirk troops saved, only disarmed, ourselves as yet unarmed, to face the might of victorious Germany, to face also the carefully saved up strength of an Italy, which then still ranked as a first-class power. Here at home, in this island, invasion was near. The Mediterranean was close to us. Our small, ill-equipped forces in Egypt and the Sudan seemed to await destruction. All the world, even our best friends, thought that our end had come. Accordingly, we prepared ourselves to conquer or to perish. We were united in that solemn, majestic hour. We were all equally resolved, at least, to go down fighting. It fell to me, in those days, to express the sentiments and resolves of the British nation in that supreme crisis of its life. That was for me an honor far beyond any dreams or ambitions I had ever nursed. And it is one that cannot be taken away. For a whole year after the fall of France, we stood alone, keeping the flag of freedom flying and the hopes of the world alive. We conquered the Italian Empire. We destroyed or captured almost all Mussolini's African army. We liberated Abyssinia. We have so far successfully protected Palestine, Syria, Persia, and Iraq from German designs. We have suffered grievous reverses in going to the aid of the heroic Greeks. We bore unflinching many a heavy blow abroad, and still more in our cities here at home. And all this time, cheered and helped by President Roosevelt and the United States, we stood alone, neither faltering nor flagging. Where are we now? Can anyone doubt that if we are worthy of it, as we shall be, we have in our hands our own future? As in the last war, so in this, we are moving through many reverses and defeats to complete and final victory. We have only to endure and to persevere to conquer. Now we are no longer unarmed. We are well armed. Now we are not alone. We have mighty allies, bound irrevocably by solemn faith and common interests, to stand with us in the ranks of the United Nations. During the time that we were all alone, we were steadily growing stronger. He would have been a bold man, however, who in those days would have put down in black and white exactly how we were going to win. But as has happened before in our island history, by remaining steadfast and unyielding, stubborn, if you will, against a continental tyrant, we reached the moment when that tyrant made a fatal blunder. Dictators, as well as democracies and parliamentary governments, make mistakes sometimes. Even Hitler makes mistakes sometimes. In June last, without the slightest provocation, and in breach of a pact of non-aggression, he invaded the lands of the Russian people. At that time, he had the strongest army in the world, trained in war, flushed with incredible, unbroken success, and equipped with limitless munitions and the most modern weapons. He had also secured to himself the advantages of surprise and treachery. Thus he drove the youth and manhood of the German nation forward into Russia. Then Hitler made his second grand blunder. He forgot about the winter. There is a winter, you know, in Russia. For a good many months, the temperature is apt to fall very low. There is snow, there is frost, and all that. Hitler forgot about this Russian winter. He must have been very loosely educated. We all heard about it at school, but he forgot it. I have never made such a bad mistake as that. Now is the time to use our increasingly superior air strength to strike hard and continually at the home front in Germany. Now is the time to bring home to the German people the wickedness of their rulers, by destroying under their very eyes the factories and seaports on which their war effort depends. German propaganda has been constantly appealing of late to British public opinion to put a stop to these severe forms of warfare, which, according to the German view, should be the strict monopoly of the Ehrenvolk. Herr Hitler himself has not taken at all kindly to this treatment, and he has been good enough to mingle terrible threats with his whinings. He warns us solemnly that if we go on smashing up the German cities, his war factories and his bases, he will retaliate against our cathedrals and historic monuments if they are not too far inland. We have heard his threats before. 18 months ago, in September 1940, when he thought he had an overwhelming air force at his command, he declared that he would rub out, that was the actual expression, rub out our towns and cities. And he certainly had a good try. But now it is the other way round. We are in a position to carry into Germany many times the tonnage of high explosives which he can send here. And this proportion will increase all the summer, all the autumn, all the winter, all the spring, all the summer, and so on, till the end. The accuracy of our bombing has nearly doubled, and with continued practice, I expect it will improve still more. Moreover, at the same time, our methods of dealing with his raiders over here have more than repaid the immense care and science bestowed upon them and the very large scale upon which they are applied. We have waited long for this turning of the tables and have taken whatever came to us meanwhile. This week, two islands have been in our minds, one in very large, the other very small, Madagascar and Malta. We have found it necessary to take precautions to prevent Madagascar falling into enemy hands by some dishonorable and feeble drifting or connivance by Vichy, like that which injured us so much in Indochina. It is 3 months since the decision was taken, and more than 2 months since the expedition left these shores. while the troops were on the sea, I must tell you, I felt a shiver every time I saw the word Madagascar in the newspaper. All these articles with diagrams and measured maps showing how very important it was for us to take Madagascar and forestall the Japanese and be there first for once, as they said, filled me with apprehension. There was no question of leakage or breach of confidence. For, as they say, great minds think alike. But shrewd surmise may be as dangerous as leakage. The smaller island is Malta, a tiny rock of history and romance. Today we welcome back to our shores General Dobby, for nearly 2 years the heroic defender of Malta. For the moment, the terrific air attack on Malta has slackened. It looks as if a lot of enemy aircraft had moved eastward. I wonder why. If so, another intense air battle for Malta, upon which the enemy have concentrated such an immense preponderance of strength, and for which they have sacrificed so many of those aircraft, which they now have to count more carefully every day, another intense air battle will have been definitely won. If we look back today over the course of the war, as it has so far unfolded, we can see that it seems to divide itself into four very clearly defined chapters. The first ended with the overrunning by the Nazis of Western Europe and with the fall of France. The second chapter, Britain alone, ended with Hitler's attack upon Russia. I would call the third chapter, which then began, the Russian glory. May it long continue. The fourth chapter opened at Pearl Harbor, when the military party in Japan treacherously attacked the United States and Great Britain in the Far East. That is where we are now. The Japanese warlords cannot be indifferent to the losses of aircraft inflicted upon them at so many points, and particularly off the northern coasts of Australia, and in their repulse at Colombo and Trincomalee. Time will, however, be needed before the true strengths on either side of the Eastern War become manifest. I am not prone to make predictions, but I have no doubt tonight that British and American sea power will grip and hold the Japanese, and that overwhelming air power, covering vigorous military operations, will lay them low. This would come to pass, of course, very much sooner, should anything happen to Hitler in Europe. Therefore, tonight, I give you a message of good cheer. You deserve it, and the facts endorse it. But be it good cheer or be it bad cheer, will make no difference to us. We shall drive on to the end and do our duty, win or die. God helping us, we can do no other.